and welcome to the Ended Up in Vegas podcast. I'm Nikki.
I'm Megan.
And today our guest is Amber Romero from Movement Mortgage. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. So today we're talking about all of the people who are in a super low rate mortgage, maybe, you know, 2.75%, let's say, just throw out an example. So really low mortgage payment every month, but they want to move into a new home. They don't want to give up that low rate mortgage.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some options that people like that have to look other places without necessarily selling that property that they have the ability to cash flow.
Yeah, I think that is a common occurrence in today's market. I've done several loans lately where they had a house and they have a great rate on it and their payment's really low, but they're like, okay, I'm ready for something new. Mm-hmm. So they basically just rent that out and become landlords. And then so keeping that low rate, nothing changes with the house. You're now making cash flow on it because you're renting out for more than payments on, and then you're moving into a new house and it's not counting against you or hurting you as far as debt to income ratios and things like that go.
Perfect. So we'll just take everybody's hand and walk you through slowly what that process looks like.
Yeah.
So it begins where, you know, a client calls us and we refer them to you.
Step one.
Yes. Let's walk everybody slowly through all of those steps.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially a client would get with you and say, hey, this is my situation. I bought my house, whatever, 10 years ago. We need an extra bedroom or we want to be in a different area, whatever the reason is. I refinanced, you know, 2 years ago. My rate's 2.5. What do I do? I want a new house. I don't really want to give up this rate. You know, what are my options? And for that, you know, I would refer the client to me, talk to them through. We would really take a full overview of what their finance and everything else looks like. But also what I do is I kind of look into all the different scenarios and all the different options. But for this example in particular is I'm going to look at what their payment is. I'm going to look at the mortgage payment, see their rate, all of that jazz, and then also go online and see, you know, what's a comparable rent. We not be able to use that full amount what you actually are going to rent it out for, but we can essentially omit the liability because if the numbers work, which you refinanced 2 years ago, you're in the house for a while, you don't have anything else crazy going on, you essentially omit that liability and that payment so it's not counting against you.
Right. So if you have a $1,200 mortgage and your house can rent for $2,200, then you can omit the $1,200 and then show the difference in a positive income, right?
Yeah.
Or so, to an extent.
To an extent. So we're not going to take that if it's $1,200, you're rent for $2,200, that difference of $1,000, we're not going to count that towards income because that's new income that is basically not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. But we're going to take essentially make it even Steven of all of the other, that's what I'm looking for. Words are hard.
I know. Words are so hard. I'm like, where's my vocabulary?
Like, what's that word
I was looking for? I have it in my brain. It just shuffles around.
Yeah. All the other current expenses. So HOA, things like that. And then we usually use 75% of your lease agreement. So you do have to have a lease agreement. We're not going to give extra income to the file, but we are going to essentially zero it out.
So how does that work? Let's do some specific examples. Let's just assume someone is going to rent their house out, but they're living in it. So how would they would have to have at least before closing? I mean, when is that, when or before application is submitted?
No. So you have to have a lease agreement before you close on your house. So you just have to get a lease agreement approved by underwriting before it's funded. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So in on their agreement, obviously, you know, if you're closing on, you know, May 1st, then you know, the move out date can be, you know, May 1st or something like that. So that's pretty, they kind of get it.
Okay.
So yeah, unless it's not anything crazy or too far out. Though. Okay. Yeah.
So they need to have their house on the market looking for a tenant probably at the time that they're...
I would say so. A word of mouth, honestly. I know a lot of people who have rented out word of mouth.
So just to make sure I fully understand. So like I'm in a very similar situation. I could probably rent my house for $2,000 a month. I think my mortgage, not including HOA, is I'm making extra payments. So it's in the $1,200 range. So that's $800. But you would take 75% of the $2,000 it could be rented for, is rented for. And then that, so what is that? Good at math. So let's say it's $500.
Yeah.
How does that apply to, does that get applied as income? Because it, there's no history. So does that just come off of the liability, that, that amount?
So what they would do is, like, if your mortgage payment is $1,200 and your lease agreement, they're going to take 75% of what your lease agreement is. But if there's any overage amount, they're not going to add it towards income.
Okay.
Because obviously that would change your debt to income ratio. Sure. And it's not necessarily guaranteed income.
Do you have to?
And it's new.
Right. Yeah. If it's, if you, if that house had been rented for, let's say, a year or two years, what's the time frame in which?
The time frame is, if it's under a year, you can use a lease agreement. They are still going to use 75% because of vacancy. They automatically add a 25% vacancy factor. If it's 2 years on taxes, then they are going to use whatever you filed on taxes. That is also why I tell clients all the time, like, don't skip out on your taxes. Don't write everything off, because at the end of the day, if you write off and you have several rentals and it's negative at the end of the day, then we can't use any income for that. It's going to count against you to maintain having those rentals. So sometimes, depending on the underwriter or what they're going to condition for, they might ask for a canceled check or like first month's, or just proof of the first month's deposit, and then the security deposit, something like that. It's not always, sometimes you can just get a buy with the lease agreement, but also add that caveat in there.
So what if the homeowner needs their equity to buy their new home? So let's say they have $200,000 in equity and they want to put 10 or 20% down on their next home. Would you handle the second financing for, would you do a loan on that first home?
Yeah, you could do a few things. You could do a HE loan, which is similar to a home equity line of credit, but it's a little bit different. It's kind of capped and it's fixed. And then a, you could do a HELOC, or you do a cash out refinance. The only thing about that is, if we're talking about a scenario that you had a 2.5% interest rate and now you want to do a cash out, you also have to do a cash out as an investment property, since you are vacating that premises in order to buy your new primary. They're going to see it. They're going to catch it on your credit report. You're not going to escape that one. So in that situation, I wouldn't say it's the best, but it's a really great option. I just recommended this to my client the other day, which is kind of a little bit of a tangent, but she has, she acquired a property. I think it's only about $200,000 loan amount that's owed on it. She probably has, the house is probably worth maybe $350,000. And what I recommended to her, I was like, hey, this isn't going to be your forever home. Go ahead, because she's going to take out money for repairs. I said, go ahead and cash out, since we're doing cash out refinance anyways, go ahead and cash out the money you're going to use for your down payment for your next house, because go put in a high yield savings account, save that money. And then when you're ever ready in the next year, you already have that money. You're not trying to pinch your pennies and save every little dime for the next year and budget or whatever. You already have that money saved, and it's not really impacting your payment too much, and you're going to cash out anyways. So that's also a really good option.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the alternative question to what Megan just asked is, you know, first, how do I, you know, how do I get into the first step, which is, okay, you're going to rent your home. You're going to rent the home that you have the low rate mortgage on right now. You may not be able to use that, that profit that you're making off of the rent as income, but you're going to use it to set aside to either reinvest in a different way, or to reinvest in your new mortgage. So after that, I think this, the next question that people want to know is, how much money do I need to come up with as a down payment on that second home?
5%.
5%.
Yep.
5% of the purchase price.
Correct.
Okay.
So that is going to be basically your cheapest way to get in, and you're just going to buy a new primary.
Okay.
So a lot of times I have clients coming to me kind of on the reverse of this, that they're like, I want to buy another property. I want to buy an investment property and they already own a house. I'm like, you should just buy another primary. And I don't think people think about it in that sense. They just think about, I'm like, if you want it for the best, essentially the best bang for your buck, you're going to get a better, or you're going to get a better deal on your interest rate. And also your down payment's going to be less. But that's, you know, 5% for your new house. And
yeah, because people most often think, oh, I need a 10 or 20% down payment for a second home. And what I think is also important to point out to people is, when you're talking about a primary residence, most people, when, you know, they're not familiar with loans, they're not buying and selling homes quite often, they don't necessarily recognize the difference between buying a primary residence, buying an investment property, buying a vacation property. They all look different. They're all going to insure, be cost different in insurance, mean different things when it comes to your taxes.
Yes.
So go ahead and explain then what happens. You make a new primary residence, and then there's an important step after that to do with your existing primary residence.
100%. So, and this is also kind of what I told my client the other day. I was like, once this becomes a rental, I'm going to tell you this very early on in the process. You're not even there yet. But once it becomes, people mess this up all the time.
Yeah.
So what they have, what I see, let me tell you what I don't want to see first is they go rent it out. However you do it, that's totally fine. You move to your new house, you know, for your minimum 5% down, whatever, all good. What they don't do is now they're like, oh, I'm just not going to put this on my taxes. And they just have it on your face. It's scary, right? Because they're like, well, I don't want to pay on it. It's under the table. It's no big deal. Yada, yada, yada. So the reason this becomes an issue is it kind of, it always catches up to you. You're going to pay it one way or another. So it catches up to you when you say 2 years go by, it's all money under the table. And then you go to buy another new house or something like that. Or you want to go buy a vacation house now. So I'm like, all right, great. Like, so I'm looking at it as a lender, obviously, and I'm like, you didn't file taxes for the last 2 years on it. I have to count this mortgage against you because like there's no proof. Sometimes you can, with a really long or really strong letter of explanation, kind of get by and kind of BS some things, but it's going to look risky if you're on paper, have this other mortgage, you don't have anything, you know, filed on taxes as far as collecting rent and things like that. So long story short, put it on taxes. Don't write everything off. Don't go in the negative for it because that's going to negatively impact you too. Your taxes impact you for 2 years. And that's 2 years of filed. So if you're like right now, we're in 2023, you know, your taxes are still affecting you from what you filed in 2021. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And there are different, you know, strategies that your CPA will use once you mark your first home. So the home that you're living in right now with that low rate mortgage, once you're saying, okay, this is now a rental and the new home that I just purchased is now my new primary, the clock starts. And then 2 years after that, it changes the tax implications if you want to go and sell the rental home and what you'll pay in the form of capital gains and all of that going forward, right?
Absolutely, because that also impacts your taxes when you go to sell too.
So go ahead.
How does a HELOAN, so how does a HELOAN rate compare to, let's say, a conventional, you know, conventional rate?
I've said they're higher. I'll start off with that. But also their margins are a lot more complex is what I'll say on them. So it's hard to really quote a flat rate on there because not only does it impact on, not only is it matters on your credit, there's more breakdowns as far as how is your rate. So they're higher.
But as a general rule, so a HELOC is different from a HELOAN is different from a HELOC, and a HELOC is a variable rate, right? And it's an equity line of credit that you can take money out and put money back onto. Whereas
you can draw on it for like several, usually it's like 10 years. And after that,
you go into a repayment, right?
Right. You can, and it's best way to describe it, it's really like a credit card on top of just tied to your house, attached to your house.
Whereas a HELOAN is a fully amortized, it's a second, it's essentially a second or third mortgage, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So that would be your second option if you don't have the money to come up with up front for a down payment.
And what I would even too is like, I don't want to sway people either way, but and everyone's like, finances are personal and everyone's situation is different, but I also sometimes recommend people, I'm like, look at a 401k loan. Honestly, that's probably going to be your cheapest bet.
And most people don't know that they can pull from their 401k and use it as a down payment and not have to put that money back for a certain amount of time.
Exactly. So I think that's probably the cheapest way to go. If you can get gift funds from a family member or something like that, obviously that would be great. You can use your tax return. Any bonuses. I just did a video on this. Bonuses, overtime, things like that. You can even do, if like you sell a car, you just have to have proof and like receipts of like bill of sale and things like that. So there's a lot of options. So it doesn't have to be. I think people think, okay, down payment, I have to come up with whatever, $20,000 in the next 12 months, how I'm going to do it. They break it down and try to budget, which is great. But there's also other options out there. So
I think that's helpful.
Even selling stocks, bond, crypto, things like that. Like if you cash it out, then there's your option too. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then maybe talk to people who are looking to enter the real estate market mm-hmm. and just invest. Maybe they want to stay in their home and keep the mortgage that they have
yeah.
and then rent another property. Kind of take us through what that looks like for them as far as down payment and requirements.
Yeah. I would say if you're going to do a vacation rental here in Las Vegas, it's kind of difficult. You can't buy a second house here. It's too close in proximity. Mm. Like, you're not really realistically, even if you live in Lake Las Vegas, you're not going to buy a vacation house in North Las Vegas, even though it is 45 minutes apart.
Right.
Sure. Pahrump, you could possibly get away with. So that's usually people's first reaction. They're like, oh, I want to buy a second house first. It's 10% down. It's going to be cheaper. But you could definitely do that in another market, maybe mm-hmm. in California, Scottsdale, somewhere like that. And depending on what their Airbnb or short-term rental regulations are, if you want to live in it part-time,
mm-hmm.
That's a good one. And as far as other just flat investments, I would say 20 to 25% down, and you can buy that. You can buy the neighbor, you know, the house next door to you, or you can buy in completely another market as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends what you're looking for as far as cash flow as well, what your long-term goal is with it.
Megan had talked about portable mortgages in our last episode.
Yeah.
Have you done any of those or had any portable experience?
Mortgage. Yeah. So
there's always like a new hot topic button something. Yeah.
Yes.
It's the ability to take your mortgage with you into the purchase of a new home. So
haven't seen them.
I would like one. I would like a gift card.
Yeah, exactly.
From 2020 with the interest rate.
I would be interested to see if those really shake exist. Out mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. and also like your mortgage is tied to, like, obviously, as we all know, we're all been in the industry, it's like when you're going under contract, it's that house, it's that address, mm-hmm. it's that appraisal, that condition of the home, everything. So mm-hmm. I don't know, I'd be interested to see if one happens.
Yeah,
it's definitely something we're looking into. I was like, why can't I take, and I understand qualifying for it, you know, but
right.
as we see, there's so many people, I think, as prices have appreciated so much in the last 3 years, there are a lot of people who are holding off on selling, which is, you know, contributing to the, shortage of inventory.
Absolutely.
If those people could take their low rate mortgage with them, mm-hmm. you know, they would still maybe qualify, you know, new appraisal or whatever. They could take that mortgage and that rate with them.
Right.
I think that would, what's the word I'm looking for? I think that would incentivize people to purchase another home much faster.
Totally.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of costs in procuring a mortgage. Mm-hmm. You've paid it down 5-7 years. So especially people who are in retirement age, I can think of a neighbor right now. They would like to move to a different part of Vegas to be closer to their grandkids.
Right.
But our mortgage is too low. We've paid too much down on it. So we're going to stay here. So I think that there are a lot of people who would probably downsize, move into something else if they could take that mortgage that's been amortized over 10, 15 years with them and then just get a second mortgage for.
Yeah. I think if it were to do that, I think it would be a really specialty product because mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, like, we only see the front end mm-hmm. of things and we mm-hmm. see, you know, the homeowner getting into the house and qualifying for the loan, even mine too. It's like I forget, but there's a whole back end and there's, you know, hedge funds and there's mm-hmm. like all of that jazz and there's market and servicing and like who really owns the loan. And mm-hmm. so I think in honoring that rate, because it's like, I don't know, I think rates is like picking a seat for a concert. It's like only for that time, that day. Maybe that's mm-hmm. not the best analogy, but so I don't know. I'd be super curious to see if they are a thing, will be a thing, who's offering them.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is just such a big issue because we read a statistic recently that said 99% of homeowners have an interest rate that's lower than 6%.
Yeah. I saw one, and I'd be curious too, because I saw one today, it was like 50%. I'm like, I have no idea which one's true.
Right.
But
it's a high number, right?
Yeah. Either way, 100% is a high number. I think it's like 30% of the homes who are like more owned free and clear mm-hmm. in Vegas. Granted, I don't know how many of those are investment properties and like owned by, you know, BlackRock or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I believe it. That the other way, whatever, it's 51% or 99%. It's ridiculous. It's insane.
I mean, if a majority of homeowners have an interest rate that's lower than 6%, right there, that's enough education to let people know why the market's not going to crash.
Right.
Like it did in 2008.
Oh yeah. Well, also, I think what it is, I think we're both right. I think it's 99% is less than 6% and the 51% is less than 4%.
Yeah. 4%. I was gonna say
I think that's, I think that's, those are the stats.
Right. Oh, and so that's the, you know, that's the important thing to get through to people is that, you know, the market's not going to take a huge tumble because people have so much equity. Mm-hmm. They have such low mortgage prices. So why would you stop paying your mortgage? People stop paying their mortgage because they didn't have the money.
Right.
When you can afford your mortgage, you keep paying the mortgage and you don't have foreclosures.
Absolutely. And there's always going to be foreclosures because there's always somebody who's going to be in a really bad sticky situation. And mm-hmm. that's just like part of the market in general.
Yeah.
So as we all know, it's like the supply and the demand. And like once the rates drop, I think next month we'll start seeing some relief. I personally think it's going to be reflecting a lot what we saw last year as far as overbid because there's such a demand.
What do you think? Because I noticed earlier this year, I think in January, rates went down a little bit and there was already like mm-hmm. it's almost mm-hmm. instantaneous that like it's like that lever, right? So
totally.
Rates are up a little bit. They've kind of been fluctuating a lot, but we saw it earlier in the year is the second those rates get close to 6%, the buying, mm-hmm. the buying goes up and off. And I'm seeing it too. I don't know if it,
100%.
I posted something about it this morning. I've had a couple listings. I've been out on showings. I've been doing open houses. There's a lot of activity.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw an article recently that application demand, mortgage application, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Words are hard. That mortgage applications are on the up. So are you seeing that too?
Yeah, I am. And like for January, it was a really good month. I don't know if it was because it's a new year and people mm-hmm. are like, I'm going to try it again and buy a house, see what I qualify for. And also like the interest rates make a huge impact on our market,
right?
And mortgage applications in general. But we also, it's like, especially in Vegas, as we come into a spring market, like it definitely heats up. And so I think that has something to do with it too. Mm-hmm. But once we see a little bit more of decline, I think it'll be, we'll see the applications go up a lot as well.
Yeah. For sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on to our podcast.
You.
We'll have you on again. We'll talk more to you in the future. But
yes.
Thank you so much for giving us this information. We hope it was helpful to our viewers. Mm-hmm. And we thank you for watching this edition of Ended Up in Vegas. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next time.